Okay, so this is the last Saturday of February, so we're about 2 months into our winter retreat, and another month to go, and we've been using the theme of the Four Foundations of Mindfulness to explore and to use during this retreat time. And the readings that we've been listening to, personally, I find them really quite helpful, inspiring, useful. And so it is, it definitely has been a rich topic to explore and to rely on. And of course, tonight I'll add one more perspective or one more angle on these four foundations of mindfulness. Have been what's been coming up for me to that would be useful to share is to remind us all of the seven factors of awakening. This is part of the Dhammanupassana Satipatthana, the foundation of reflection on the Dhammas, qualities of Dhamma, or aspects of Dhamma, aspects of mental objects, and as an object to lift up into the mind to give us a perspective is very helpful, very useful, very necessary. As the and in that Dhammanupassana Satipatthana, the different objects that the Buddha brings up to reflect on are the five hindrances, five aggregates, six sense bases, seven factors of awakening, four noble truths. And so that this is one of the things, and I think in particular, I'm just reflecting on the nature of the Buddha's teaching, the different teachings that the Buddha gives are, I mean, they're recursive in the sense that they recur in different ways, or they fold in on each other, or they are fold back on each other, so that they're intertwined or interdependent for the purpose of the teachings, which is, as the Buddha say, reiterates over and over again, I teach two things, dukkha and the ending of dukkha, and so that these are part of the toolkit that he gives us, and it highlights different aspects of the path of the training, and they'll recur in other teachings, and they will highlight other teachings or highlight the whole path of that for that purpose. So that's really helpful to be reflecting on, and certainly in the discourse on mindfulness of breathing, that's the Buddha is quite explicit, and that they say these four foundations of mindfulness, mindfulness of breathing fulfills the four foundations of mindfulness. Four foundations of mindfulness, when they're fulfilled, fulfill the seven factors of awakening. And when the seven factors of awakening are fulfilled, then they fulfill a true knowledge and deliverance. So that they are important to reflect on and to bring up into the mind. Or when you think in terms of, say, like right effort, what is right effort, and it's sort of the effort to deal with the unwholesome, unskillful, which are usually exemplified by the five hindrances, negative qualities that obstruct the mind. And then the cultivation and sustaining of wholesome qualities, which are oftentimes pointed to as exemplified by the seven factors of awakening, of seven factors of enlightenment. So that these are, it recurs, it comes up over and over again, just how integral the cultivation of these qualities are. And they'll be familiar to everyone who's practiced, but begins with mindfulness. Second quality is Dhamma Vicaya, investigation of Dhammas, investigation of states, contemplation of qualities. I mean, it can translated in different ways, but really it encapsulates the quality of wise attention, considered attention, considered reflection, yoniso manasikara, which the Buddha places tremendous emphasis on as a quality of progress on the path is required. This skillful reflection. Then the aspect of vilya, of effort, of energy. The fourth quality is beti, or joy, rapture, exhilaration. Fifth quality is pasati, which is calm or tranquility, settling. Sixth quality is samadhi, collectedness of mind, stability of mind, centeredness of mind. And the last quality is upekkha, which is equanimity or equipoise, or serenity. So these are the qualities that we want to be cultivating, and they work as a progression. On a rational basis, it's a good starting point, establishing mindfulness and cultivating that mindfulness, and then building it into the wise, into Dhamma Vicaya, and then putting forth effort, experiencing joy from that effort, and then that joy helping to relax and settle, and tranquility arising as tranquility of body and mind starts to gain momentum, and the mind is much more ready to settle and to focus and to collect itself in samadhi. And then as the mind becomes more stable and settled, then it's able to respond, relate to itself and the world around with a quality of upekkha, of serenity or equanimity. So these are there is a natural progression that one can look at, but then it's also the Buddha points out that there is an important need to be attending as one is practicing, to pay attention to how the mind is responding to the training, to the practice, and responding appropriately, because sometimes we are, we're sitting and we might be dull, might be tired, sometimes, especially at the beginning of retreat, might be quite exhausted, really, or kind of fried. But so we need to really stimulate the mind, uplift the mind from using that Dhamma Vicaya, using Virya, using Bhiti, using that sense of kind of a joyful, uplifted quality to stimulate the mind. Or we are sort of been practicing for a while. We're 2 months into the retreat, and it's kind of flat and dull. That happens. So that you have, rather than just sort of settling into a routine of dullness and stupor, you want to, how do you stimulate the mind? Okay, Dhamma Vicaya is really investigating and reviewing the teachings, reviewing the mental states, reviewing the relationship that we have to the practice, so that we're really using that quality of investigation of states, applying the mind with that, really utilizing the ability of the mind to discern and to discriminate. What's useful? What's not useful? What's actually beneficial? What's going to bear fruit? And am I following this path skillfully? Is it unfolding in an appropriate manner? So that Dhamma Vicaya plays a really big role, and in ways of bringing up effort, and bringing up a basis of a joyful relationship to our practice. Because if it's just sort of plugging away at it, hoping for some positive result, that may not happen. It's a nice wish, nice hope, but you've got to work with the practice, got to work with the mind, so that you're actually enjoying it, and it's aligning with truth. I mean, it's the nature of the mind. It's the nature of the mind to be bright. The problem is we get in the way, and we believe in the moods, believe in the afflictive emotions that are there. But the Buddha, the nature of mind in general is this papasara citta, it's radiant, or that radiance underlying. But it's so easy to get caught up in the moods of the mind that we miss that. So it's just how do we apply the mind? Yeah, and then sometimes the mind gets too busy, too anxious, too worried. We can be really get really anxious about the mind, about ourselves, about our defilements, especially in sometimes in retreat, you can just sort of rehash and regurgitate all of our misdeeds and failings, and it's just so painfully self oriented. The mind can have that habit. Paying attention to what actually helps to settle them, what actually helps to relax, paucity, how to bring the mind to tranquility, how to settle, how to calm, you do use reflection, vitakka, vichara, lifting up the mind towards a wholesome object, lifting up the mind to a pleasing object. Yeah, so what the Buddha says, like pasada nimitta, this image in the mind that is pleasing. So that has to be very conscious, and that is very relaxing and settling, and the mind inclines to tranquility, and the body becomes relaxed, the mind becomes settled, and it's not necessarily the settledness of samadhi, but it is moving in that direction. And we have to be skillful in how do we coax that along, rather than getting in the way. So that's these are factors of awakening, factors of enlightenment. And so it is important to to attend to the what does the mind need, because that's its balancing aspect. There's like the active qualities of mind, dhamma vicaya, virya, piti. These are, and piti and joy are joy, rapture, exhilaration. I mean, it's rapture is maybe a bit strong. It's not that it's not possible, but it's maybe ordinarily we don't experience it to that extent, even though it is possible. But it's an exhilaration and uplift, and joy. It's very joyful. And the mind is that is certainly we can direct our attention so that we do pay attention, and that's of course the quality that the Buddha says is always needed is mindfulness, whether it's for applying the kind of active and uplifting aspects or the applying of the settling and the more passive and calming aspects, and the sense of bringing to fruition a quality of paucity. And still, you still need to be mindful. Something that Ajahn Chah would emphasize a lot, and that's, whatever meditation we are doing, whatever result of meditation that we're getting, whatever samadhi is arising, has to have mindfulness as a factor. It just is a necessary feature of the mind that is on the path. If there's not an alert presence of mind, then it tends to go to dullness. I mean, that's one of the drawbacks of samadhi, that the mind becomes still and unmoving, which are nice words to hear, but if you're dull and still and unmoving it's not very helpful. There's a balance that is really required that we have to pay attention to, so that cultivation of paucity, of tranquility, of calm, and there's a relaxation that's there, but there's still mindfulness. Mindfulness becomes even sharper, or should become even sharper, so that there's an alert recognition of the what are we experiencing? Is it useful? Is it beneficial? And then mind starts to collect and gather and become more settled and stable and becomes more clear. There's less going on. It's like Ajahn Chah would say, it's like the body becomes stronger with the more physical activity that we do, but the mind becomes stronger when we're able to do less. I mean, in terms of less thinking, less emotional ups and downs, less proliferation, the mind actually becomes stronger. It becomes clearer and settled, more focused. So that's an important basis for as we grow, and then the equanimity has a stable foundation to establish itself in, and that sense of equanimity and unshakability is a really beautiful mental statement. I think of whenever I think of the word of equanimity. Because sometimes the connotation in English with equanimity is, it's easy to drift into indifference. It's you don't care. Okay, you get you get a diagnosis of terminal cancer. You have equanimity. It's you're able to hold it without being shaken. Your mother dies, the world is falling apart around you. It's not that you don't care. It's not that you don't feel it, but you're not shaken by it. You've got a context to hold it. And the context is mindfulness, investigation of Dhamma, effort, and, you know, sati, Dhamma vichaya, weirdly, sati, pasati, tranquility, pasati, samadhi, upeka. It's held with those qualities. And, you know, somebody who, to me, always epitomized equanimity is Ajahn Chah. And he was, you know, somebody who was very much engaged with the people around him, but he wasn't shaken by the world. He wasn't shaken by the kind of the ups and downs of the people around him, whether they were his monks and nuns, whether it was the lay people who were close to him, or whether it was sort of visitors from far away. He just wasn't shaken by that. Or the events in the world around. I mean, I was with him at a time when Vietnam War was going on. Communist insurgents were very active all around the monastery and around his branch monasteries. And there were some branch monasteries that he wouldn't allow us as Westerners to go to because of the nature of what was going on around. He didn't want a Westerner. It wasn't appropriate for a Westerner to be there. But it wasn't. It was just sort of, okay, well, that's the reality of it. It's just equanimous within those conditions. So unshaken. So the world is always going to do what the world is doing. We can be stable and clear within that. So these factors of awakening are really just the important tools to be paying attention to and cultivating, developing that sense of what they do is untangle or they diminish the habitual response from our deluded minds or the mind of our defilements and our. It's like the image that the Buddha gives is the. It's like for the rigging and the ropes and rigging of a ship or a boat on the coast. And it's interesting because he gives an image of like a coastal and the Buddha the coast of India, the seashore. And the Buddha was quite a long way from the where he grew up and lived, but he's still using that image. If those ropes and that rigging get wet with salt water, and then they're exposed to rain and to sun and to the elements, then it's not very long, and that rigging and those ropes kind of start to fall apart and lose their strength and are easily broken. And he said, in the same way, the fetters, the sangyojan, the things that fetter and obstruct the human mind, the human heart, they break down, they lose their strength. They disintegrate, and it's a slower process to untangle or undo the strength of something like these fetters that entangle us. The fetters, like the main fetters of to that first level of awakening, Sakkaya Ditti, that identity view, that sense of me, this is who I am, this is my person, this is my personality, this is who I really am. I am this body, I am this mind, I am these factors of say body, feeling, perception, these five aggregates of being. This is who and what I am. And say, no, these are just factors of being that you don't need to identify with. You don't need to take on as this is me as a person, a personality, an identity can be undermined and it can disintegrate. Skeptical doubt, doubting mind, what's right, what's wrong, what's true, what's not true. I mean, there's a clarity of being that we can experience when we're willing to drop these fetters and see things in their true nature. And of course that is fulfilled by the following being supported by these seven factors of awakening. Sankhaya Ditti, Vichikicca, Sila Bhatta Parama, so just attachment to convention, attachment to, the old translation was, attachment to rites and rituals, but attachment to practice and precept, in the sense that if I just do it like this, I'll be purified, I'll be pure, I'll be safe. If I just keep these precepts, if I just watch the breath long enough, then I'll somehow be awakened and enlightened. But it's you have to learn how to use these tools, and you have to have the mindfulness and wisdom to apply them in the appropriate manner. So, but as you do learn to apply them, and these seven factors of awakening, the fetters of being, they lose their strength, they lose their consistency, and they disintegrate, and you don't see it all of a sudden. But you gain confidence as you continue to apply this practice and experience the fruits of it. It really supports this, the fundamental clarity of the mind, fundamental freedom of the heart. It's something that Ajahn Chah and just Theravada tradition in general say, yeah, there is this fundamental freedom of the heart, and it is accessible through appropriate training, appropriate application. It's like applying the right medicine to the wound, the body will heal, and sometimes it takes longer. Sometimes it's a quick thing. I mean, just like right now, what's it? Gosh, it's about a month ago. I had to have to go to the dermatologist regularly, get things frozen off and get things scraped off. And the last time they did a biopsy, and okay, you got to take this bit out again. And so they scraped a whole bunch off my arm, it's still not healed properly. It's better. There's no reason for any kind of worry or concern, but it just takes a long time. And that is very much the case. I mean, if the body takes a long time to heal, the mind, it takes longer. So you have to be patient, but you still have to apply the right medicine. You still have to look after the the wound, and the wound is this mind that reverts to dukkha, me and my suffering. And so just being able to recognize that there is this path, and there is the fruits of the path, the fruits of the practice. And as we, and just becoming more and more familiar with the mind that is settled and still and clear. And it's like that, you know, one of the images that's always inspired me was the image that Upasika Ki Nanayon, she was a great practitioner and teacher, from Thailand, from the western part of Thailand, and the way she described the nature of the mind as it aligns itself with Dhamma, sort of an inward staying, unentangled knowing, all outward going knowing cast aside. It's just such a beautiful description of the mind that is present with Dhamma. It's allowed the factors of awakening to steep itself, steeping oneself in those factors of awakening. And then what arises, is this inward staying, unentangled knowing, all outward going knowing cast aside. It's just this, everything else is extraneous. And so is using this, particularly during this time, this retreat time, to be focusing our attention, paying attention to what is really helpful, what's beneficial, not getting caught up in things that entangle the mind. We're good at that. Pay attention what disentangles us, so that we can come to this unentangled knowing. I'll leave that for your reflection.